a special edition of My Money, My Lifestyle with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
Where we focus on life insurance. We'll be speaking to experts from Liberty to try and understand how exactly life insurance works. Mapalo and I are going to be interviewing some Liberty experts to really try and uncover some of those questions that we all have regarding our insurance cover. And Mapalo, today I wanted to discuss this idea of underwriting. So, you know, we know that if you have something underwritten, if you have your policy underwritten, you reduce your premiums, it tends to be cheaper. Yes. If we find people very, very resistant to doing this, I mean, are you finding that with your clients?
Maya, I think almost 50, 60% of the people I come across, they tell me, no, I'd rather just take it over the phone or without any bloods being taken at all. I think people are afraid of what they could possibly find. I mean, I know so many of my friends don't go to a doctor just for a normal checkup. Now you're telling me you are going to check all of those things and you're going to give me feedback based on that. I think people are scared.
People are scared. So they would rather, I know funeral cover, I've spoken to a lot of life insurance companies that say drives them mad. People pay for really expensive funeral cover.
Yes.
So what I thought we would do today is we are going to have an expert in underwriting on our show. And we have Lisa Gibbon, who's actually the chief underwriter at Liberty. And she's going to really unpack this for us and maybe perhaps help us to convince our listeners that underwriting can actually not be the most daunting thing. So yes. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks, Maya.
So Lisa, I mean, you've just heard Mapalo and our sort of input on this. Where are you, does this resonate with you? Is this the kind of issues you're picking up as well?
Yeah, look, absolutely. Clients are almost reluctant to share very personal information with an insurer. Mm. You know, particularly if it's intermediated. The first thing is that they're sharing that information with their broker or their financial advisor. Mm. And some of the information is a little sensitive. So understandably, people are reluctant to go through the process. It's also a fairly onerous process. You know, it's an application form with many questions, and followed on by blood tests, perhaps further medical examinations. So it's a fairly daunting process. Mm. People don't particularly like it.
I can attest to that.
You can attest. You know, I had to update my life cover about a year ago, and I was so worried. And I mean, we've spoken on the other podcast about the claim stats and being turned down on claims. And I get so nervous. It's like, what have I forgotten?
Yeah.
You know, so I agree. I mean, I think it can be a really, really onerous perhaps process. So why do they ask all those questions, Lisa? What factors go into the underwriting process?
So maybe we need to just contrast the difference between funeral cover, which is not underwritten, and fully underwritten cover. Mm. So funeral cover is definitely more expensive, and you can only get a limited amount of cover. But it is very convenient, and it serves a purpose. So it's good cover, but you can get cheaper cover through fully underwritten. The reason why that is different is because if it's fully underwritten, the underwriter has the opportunity to weed out the poor risks, so that the insurer doesn't have to pay claims on uninsurable people, somebody who's perhaps terminally ill. Funeral cover, on the other hand, allows all of those applicants to have cover. So it makes sense that funeral cover is more expensive. Mm. So the benefit of underwriting is that you have the opportunity to disclose and to secure the very best rate for yourself. So what we take into account in underwriting, the biggest part of the process is assessing somebody's physical and mental health, because that contributes most to the underwriting process. But we look at other things as well. So we look at occupation. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're an electrical linesman and you're dealing with high voltages, that would require an additional premium to what the norm would be. So we look at occupation. We also look at dangerous hobbies. If you're a Formula One racing driver, there are obviously risks associated with that, whereas mountain biking, for example, wouldn't be regarded as a hazardous
I'm sorry,
hobby.
But I think you need, no, not because my husband's a mountain biker and the injuries and the falling off the bike. But anyway, I'm glad you don't charge him more for that
sport. Yeah, so we look at the hobbies, avocations, then we look at the environment in which the person is, we look at their travel, and we expect clients to behave rationally. So we don't expect a client to go and place themselves at risk in a war-torn country. But if a client is traveling to higher risk countries, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, we obviously have a look at the risk associated with that, and then we would adjust. So the underwriters look at all of the client's health situation, and we look at all of the other bits and pieces as well. And then we say, does this look like a generally healthy person that leads a healthy lifestyle with no dangerous elements in the lifestyle? And if that's the case, then the applicant will get standard rates. So they get the very best rate. If the client, for example, is overweight, so say their BMI is 35, 36, that might attract a small loading. Mm. And then if a client is really, really ill, so somebody who's just been diagnosed with cancer or had a heart attack last month, they wouldn't necessarily be insurable right now, and they may be deferred cover until such time as their health returns to a place where we can actually assess the risk adequately.
So that's an interesting point, because if, say, for example, you get turned down on your cover, or your cover's really loaded, is it then worth going into the non-underwritten space? You know, what actually happens there? So you're accepted, but from what I've also heard, that's a dangerous ploy as well, because on claims, that's sometimes when they go and they do the assessment. So how do those two work together? You come along and say, oh, no, that's really too high, or I've been turned down, so let me go for something that's not underwritten.
Look, you can. But as I said earlier, the sums assured are much more limited. So you can get about 100,000 Rand on a non-underwritten product. And you wouldn't be underwritten, so you would be granted the cover, but they would have pre-existing conditions that they would exclude you for. But those exclusions don't last forever. So generally, it is any condition that you suffered from within the 2 years prior to taking out the policy. You won't be paid, a claim won't be paid in the 2 years following policy
inception. So this is for non-underwritten.
For non-underwritten.
So you would they ask that question? Would they ask that question in the upfront application? Not really.
They wouldn't ask any questions at all.
So this is very important, and I want to make this point, because so Mapo, you're not actually asked, oh, did you have cancer or did you have diabetes? But if you did, they don't pay out for 2 years if you claim against it for 2 years after you've taken the cover.
Correct.
So you could find yourself in like not knowing.
Correct. So it's a little bit risky. So if you are really ill and you're expecting perhaps to die in the next 2 years, then non-underwritten cover may not be your answer either. But yes, for somebody who has a hectic loading on underwritten cover, they can of course take non-underwritten cover, but there are risks associated with that as well.
Yeah, it sounds like the risks are quite high.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is that insurance is really for people who are pretty healthy. So now, and I say that, you know, we all laugh, but, you know, this is also kind of part of the reason to take it whilst you are healthy.
Yes.
And I think this is where a lot of people, you know, they only think about it when they get a diagnosis or they're worried about their health. I mean, your comments on that, Lisa?
You know, that's very interesting. So almost invariably, if there's been a scare in the family, or somebody's had a personal scare. So say, for example, a lady goes for her annual pap smear and they find abnormal cells. All of a sudden, the thought of insurance crops up. You know, then it becomes a question of, do I have enough, and should this have become cancer, would I have been covered? So yes, absolutely. People do start thinking about it when they've had a scare. I'm not certain, though, that it's correct to say that it's really only for the healthy. So I would say probably about 80% of the lives insured or the applicants that we see are granted standard rates, so they're not loaded at all.
Really, about 80%?
Yeah. Okay. So it's pretty high.
It's quite high. Yeah.
And it varies by product. So the more complicated the product, the lower the percentage standard rate, and the simpler the product, the higher percentage standard rate, because there'll be fewer things that you pay for, you know. But we do have 20% of clients who are substandard. We call it substandard, but it's a terrible word.
It's substandard,
but it means, you know, falls outside of what we've priced for. And we accept fairly high risks. You know, so people who have previously had cancer, may be insurable depending on how long ago it was and what the treatment was, what the outcome was. HIV, people who are HIV positive can get cover, people with heart attacks. So even people with very severe illnesses can get cover.
But I guess the premium then would compensate for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we adjust the premium to compensate for the risk. Mm.
And what about something like I come along and I say, look, I want cover. I can't afford the loading because I previously had cancer. So could you exclude cancer from my policy? So I can still get it for accidental death, for example, or death from something else.
Yeah, absolutely. So accidental cover is something that you can offer somebody who can't get cover as a result of poor health. So that's an option. We can exclude. We generally tend not to exclude for things like cancer on life cover, because an exclusion clause isn't always very effective, because you have to prove at the time of death, for example, that even though the person had cancer, was that what they died from? Or did they die from complications of the treatment or something else? On disability cover, we tend to use exclusions more frequently, but it tends to be more around musculoskeletal, you know, like a back exclusion clause, because it's very clear cut. So you can identify clearly where the claim comes from and whether or not it's related to the item that you wish to exclude. And then on rare disease cover, we can actually exclude, because there we have a list of benefits or list of conditions that we cover for, and we can actually just exclude a condition to say you cannot claim under this section of the policy. So there it becomes simpler. So exclusions are possible, but it depends on the benefit and it depends on the impairment.
And I wanted to also come back to funeral cover, because that's another, you know, if you are taking life cover, you could also build funeral cover into that that's effectively underwritten. I mean, how does that, so people, again, if you don't need to have a separate funeral policy that's not underwritten, because you've actually effectively been underwritten by your life cover. Yeah. So how would one build that?
So many insurers actually offer a benefit that's an immediate cover. So it's a funeral cover that's included in your life cover. And the life insured can opt to have that. And then obviously that would be more cost effective than taking out funeral cover.
It actually is. I have one with this insurance company, and it does have the immediate benefit cover. So, I've seen that it's actually cheaper to have it with your life cover as a whole instead of me going to find a funeral cover outside
separate
of that.
Separate one. Yeah. And then at least all your paperwork, I always find
exactly
one place.
Exactly.
One place. One, exactly. Like, you know, and one advisor with one piece of paper. I always think that has to be, for me, like the easiest part of the whole process.
Maybe more than one piece of paper.
Maybe more than one piece of paper. Okay, so that's quite an interesting point, Mapula, that you've just made, that you saw it was cheaper. Lisa, like by how much? I mean, my saving, if I put my funeral cover as underwritten and part of my life policy, am I saving, what, 20% maybe, than taking it standalone? I mean, how much is the saving?
Maya, it can be quite significant. You know, depending on the product and through whom you buy it, it can be up to as high as twice as expensive if it's not underwritten.
Wow. Absolutely. So you could be paying double.
Yes.
Double because you didn't want to have a few tests.
Makes underwriting look a whole lot more attractive.
I think so, Maya. And I mean, with underwriting, get a free medical checkup. That's how I would get it.
that's really true, because
it is.
Not very many people actually have annual checkups or medical checkups. And if you go through an insurer, you can get an HIV test for free, cadmium test for free to make sure that you're actually not
a non-smoker. Your wife may find out that you are secretly smoking in the bathroom or whatever,
No, you just spent a lot of time with other people who were smoking. Oh, that's why your cadmium test is positive.
Because I actually, on my health insurance, my health medical scheme, I have to every year go and do those tests. You know,
really?
Yeah, I do. I have to do cholesterol, sugar, weight, and I must in order to keep my reward program.
And
it's
all do that.
So valuable. And in fact, my husband did it and discovered that he had an elevated cholesterol, and immediately went on. He had 2 months to go and have it retested. And of course, the rewards are very, very important to us. So he went on a really strict cholesterol-free diet and got his cholesterol back to normal levels.
Wow.
But now that was just Had he have not done that test, he would have continued with a behavior that over time could have led to a heart attack risk. So I think this is these tests and this kind of thing, we don't spend enough time on our bodies. You know, Mabla and I talk a lot about money. So maybe we should be doing a show on why you should go and do your cholesterol test and your sugar test.
Absolutely.
And it actually saves you money in the longer run, because now you'd have all these medical bills that you need to treat this in the long run. So taking care of yourself and making sure that you go for this test is very important.
Yeah, extremely.
It's an early warning system as well. So one of the tests we do relatively routinely is an HbA1c, which is a blood sugar test. And there are quite a lot of applicants who have borderline readings. Mm. So they're pre-diabetic. They're not about diabetic yet, but they're pre-diabetic. And it gives them the opportunity to manage that.
Yeah. Sure. And what about smoking? I know one of the points is when you are a smoker, your premiums go higher, right?
Yes.
And we've had, I think we spoke about this some time ago, that, you know, sometimes it's good to go back and check because my husband had been loaded as a smoker, whereas he's not.
Oh, that's when he told you their blood test said something.
They did it again, but now he's loaded as a non-smoker, Maya. Maybe you're smoking in the bathroom.
So you're saying sometimes they're loaded incorrectly, so they make mistakes on the on the form.
Yeah. Or it could be that your behavior has changed. You've stopped smoking. Mm. So you've stopped smoking, and then you go back to your insurance.
So there's an opportunity to come back and say, you know I've stopped smoking. And
I mean, what kind of change does that have on your premium? Is smoking like a really serious loading?
It's pretty significant, 25-30%? Or perhaps even higher, depending on age.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot. Okay. So, one of the best
smoking
things
is very expensive. Okay? You have to buy the cigarettes. You hand over a huge amount of money in sin taxes, which government is looking for at the moment. So, I suppose from that perspective, they'll be happy. But your premiums on your life cover.
As well.
You know, it's one of the best things you can do to reduce your cost of life insurance is to stop smoking. Mm. It's one of the simplest way of getting cheaper insurance. Just don't smoke.
Just don't smoke. You heard it here first. Well, fantastic. Thanks so much, Lisa. I think you've given us some really good insights. And Mapalo, do you think this is enough to convince people? Do you think people are still going to be scared?
I think it should be enough. I mean, get yourself a free medical examination, lower your premiums, then you save money. What more do you want? Come on.
Absolutely.
Get yourself underwritten.
Go get yourself underwritten.
Stop smoking, then get yourself underwritten.
Sorry. Stop smoking, cut back on the high-fat foods, and then go and get yourself underwritten. So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website, or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.